Where can I say this, by the way?
Okay, okay. Hold on. Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2021. I'm now here with the Franklin. Now, the Franklin was previously known in, well, quite a long time ago now, as a reactionary expat. He's an Australian. He's a good and long-time friend of mine since before I started the channel. And I think I probably say that every single year, so there's no need for me to say it again. Anyway, he's got a YouTube channel, and I would recommend that you follow it if you're impressed by the conversation that we're going to have. And the conversation we're going to have is regarding the discrediting of institutions throughout the last 2 years with the COVID and the lockdowns and the Great Reset, how institutions have really disgraced themselves and induced the public to lose faith in them. And I think that this is an important point in and of itself. There are many other aspects of COVID in the last 2 years that we've gone into in Millennial, but this is one specific thing that has been alluded to here and there, but I think deserves to be focused upon. So, Franklin, welcome to Millennial.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's coming up for 10 years that we've known each other, isn't it? I think next year it'll be 10 years.
Yeah. My God, yeah. It was the start of 2012.
Yeah, incredible.
But it is starting to feel like 10 years. I mean, that's so much has happened. So much has happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. Okay, well, welcome and please take it away.
Yeah, well, I don't really want to get into the weeds with Black Death 2.0, as I call it, because I think that's just one facet of a much broader problem. It's something that's been underway, a process that's been underway for some time, but I think it's really accelerated in the past 2 years. Those who have sort of been on the periphery of society have been feeling this kind of decay, if you like, the slow motion collapse, the catabolic collapse for decades now. And there was a big hit probably back in 2008, and many people have never really recovered from that. But I think the past 2 years in particular have really knocked the stuffing out of a lot of people and their faith in society, its institutions, the elite, and so on.
It's worth, just let me interject briefly. I think it's worth saying that the context in which we're making these comments is that we are all off the West. And when we were growing up, when we were children, it was still very, it was the default view that the West is the best, that we have got life sorted out, that we know how to run things, we know how to get things done. And not just practically speaking, but also while maintaining moral probity, whereas other regions of the world are corrupt and despotic, dishonest. We know how to do things right and how to do them morally correctly as well. And also, I think we've had this idea that other parts of the world view the West in that way with a certain awe and envy. And as we'll probably get touch on throughout this stream, that is no longer the case. So please continue.
Yeah, well, on that note, I was 13 when the Berlin Wall came down. I remember that distinctly. I was 15 when the first Iraq War occurred. And there was very much a sense, there was that whole Francis Fukuyama, the end of history, the West had won the Cold War. Again, I was 15 when the Soviet Union collapsed. So these, and I remember before then, I mean, I was a kid, I remember the Los Angeles Olympic Games in 1984 and the whole sort of tension around the boycott. The Soviet, for those who don't know, the US actually boycotted the 1980 Moscow Games, and then the Soviet Union boycotted the 1984 Los Angeles Games. And I remember that whole end of the Cold War, the West winning, and this sense that everyone in the world eventually was going to become like us, and we were the role model for everyone else. And it's really been this sort of slow motion collapse, but it's picked up a lot of speed over the past decade, and it's really picked up a lot of speed over the past 2 years. And now I'm not so sure that that other parts of the world really aspire to be like us anymore. Just a sort of a quick hit list of things over the past couple of years. So there's been the whole way that the West has handled the Black Death 2.0, and often the response has sort of veered from being incompetent to downright malfeasant. And then we've also we've looked at things like the economy generally and inflation and supply shocks, all these kinds of things that are starting to become a huge problem. Earlier I mentioned that I remember the first Gulf War. Well, the thing that's really sort of bookended at least the first part of my adulthood is the War on Terror. So 2001, the US went into Afghanistan. Well, the sort of bookend on that 20 years later was that we're not really sure what that was all about, actually. We're not really sure what that achieved. And the US hasn't been able to win a war in my adulthood. And we saw the complete debacle that was the withdrawal from Afghanistan. And I wasn't in favor of all of that military adventurism, but the outcome surely is a greatly diminished West in terms of geopolitical power. And perhaps we'll get on to this later, but surely countries like China and Russia and so on, that we have a sort of a tortured relationship with them, but surely they're looking at this, and smaller countries too, are looking at this and thinking, well, the West is a done deal. Now it's a spent force. Then we look at things like the shocking decline in quality of Western education, CRT, and even interestingly the way that, so where I live, in our state, in Australia, at least prior to all of this, education was our third largest export, and I'm not sure that I'd call it an export, but nevertheless, they call it an export. And in a strange way, they also managed to throw international students under the bus, and I'm not in favor of all of the sort of mess, the international education as a kind of a backdoor to permanent residency and all of this sort of thing. But it's weird that they managed to throw all of that under the bus as well. And I'm not sure that they'll ever recover from that. And that's all well, that would all be well and good if we actually had an industrial sector that did stuff and produced stuff. But we don't have that either. So on that front, they've managed to shoot themselves in the foot. Plus, Western universities are looking increasingly dysfunctional and insane, and they don't actually produce the things that they're meant to produce. And then we can also see a general uptick in the crime and the general shabbiness of the West. So we had seemingly half of America on fire last year, in the middle of last year, with these mostly peaceful protests, as they called them. And Detroit has been in this sort of process of decay for decades now, but increasingly the images that we get out of other Western cities, not just in the US, but other Western cities, certainly the Anglosphere, is of these sort of shanty town, homeless camps, places that are unsafe. So it's not clear to me what exactly the West has going for it. Countries that are, say, on the periphery or the marginal cases. So we're going to go down with the ship here. We're a province of the global American empire. But any kind of marginal case, any country that sort of is looking for a better option, it's not clear to me what exactly it is that would hold them to the West, because the appeals in the past used to be things like, clearly we had advanced culture. Well, that's all in radical decay. Clearly, we had better technology. Again, that's in radical decay. And we have other countries that are rising in that regard. The same with the economy. There's no social cohesion. There's all this crime. There's general shabbiness. And probably the one thing that the West really used to trumpet was this whole idea of freedom and we're not like those other places. We won the Cold War, rah, 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 or this end of history nonsense. And yet the city that is only a few hours away from where I live, Melbourne, which for most of my life was regarded as the world's most livable city, and these surveys are sort of dubious in the way that they're conducted, but over the past decade, it was demoted to number two. Vienna took the top spot. But it's hard for me to see how Melbourne, for instance, can claim the title of being the world's second most livable city when it also has the dubious honor of being the city in the world that has spent the most days in lockdown over the past 2 years. It's some ridiculous, it was almost a year, maybe it's more than a year in total over the past 2 years have been spent in lockdown. And so again, the idea that, well, you come to the West for freedoms, well, what freedoms?
Well, so, and also for prosperity.
Yes, and prosperity.
What prosperity at this point? I mean, yes. The polarization is incredible. So you, in London, it's famously said that no normal person, no ordinary person lives in London. You're either a Russian billionaire or the son of a Russian billionaire, or you're on welfare. There isn't a middle class. There isn't even a working class increasingly.
Yeah, and so it's hard for me to imagine that, say, 10 years from now or 9 years from now, 2030, that the world is going to resemble the world that I knew as a young adult. Say 1991, the collapse of the Soviet Union, the end of the Cold War, the West had won, everyone in the world was going to become just like us, rah, 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 the Gulf War.
The end of history.
Yeah, all of that sort of stuff. It's hard for me to believe that that's going to be the case. And I think we're going to see a couple of things. Firstly, sort of the continued rise of the West, the decline of the West and the rise of the West.
And well, what do you mean by that?
Well, a lot of places in the world when I was younger still had very stupid political systems and stupid economic systems. Socialism and communism were still big things, big ideas. And once those countries sort of got off those stupid ideas, they are perhaps returning to their historic level. So look at India and China, for instance. They are returning to being important places. And there's you could kind of draw a triangle. It's not exactly a triangle, but roughly a triangle from Japan to India to Indonesia. And that triangle there historically was the most important part of the world. There were other times too. There were other places. But for a large part of history, that was the most important part of the world, the most populous part of the world. It contains roughly half the world's population, all of those countries in there, in that triangle. We're going to see those places continue to rise. We're going to see other places continue to rise also as they sort of get with the program and develop economically and all of this sort of thing. And that's going, and simultaneously, we're going to see the West decline. And we will probably see, I believe, that two things will happen simultaneously. One is that these other places will look at the West and say, well, it's no longer attractive. So it's no longer attractive for me to send my kid to this other place to study. We have good universities where we are now, whether that's in, say, someone in Korea or Singapore or China, wherever, that there are going to be good universities there within their own countries or in neighboring countries, that kind of thing, because they'll say, well, we've improved, and these other places that once would have been obvious to us have radically declined. And this is going to be a massive shock to the West, that there's going to be a massive decline in standard of living and geopolitical influence, a whole lot of things across the board. And I don't think the West is really prepared for losing that position of preeminence. But also, there will be sort of, when I mentioned the marginal cases earlier, I mean places that are sort of, they're vaguely within the Western orbit at the moment. But you could say a country like Serbia, for instance. When was the last time China bombed Serbia? Well, I remember the US bombing Serbia within my lifetime. And they had to sort of play ball with the West because there was no other option. But would as you, these other...
Would you say that Serie A is another example of this?
Oh, absolutely. But there'll be more and more places that we would have taken for granted as being within the Western orbit, and maybe even places like Germany, that they won't necessarily become, say, pro-China, but they will try to play both sides, if you like. They'll try to walk down the middle, if you like. Certainly places like Latin America, Africa, China's making big moves in Africa, but generally the West's ability to say this is how things are done all over the world will decay. And even within the West, that will start to decay. It already is starting, but we haven't really seen it effectively within the West. But I think the world in 2030 or 2031 will be radically different to the world in 2021, let alone 1991, when the Cold War was won.
Okay, so I want to clarify some things because I'm not sure. Well, I want you to clarify some things. Now, you said you didn't want to go into COVID. I understand. But can you outline exactly how dangerous, I mean, how dangerous do you think COVID is?
Probably not very at this point, but I'd like to preface all of this by saying that more than a year ago, when this was just on the radar and you had to look in sort of fringe places to see it, I was aware of this for two reasons. Firstly, because I look in those fringe places, and secondly, because I was aware of what was happening in Taiwan at the time. So I used to live in Taiwan, and my wife is Taiwanese, and I sort of aware of what was happening because I was getting access to sort of Chinese language news. So I was aware of what was going on, and I went to Taiwan in February last year, actually, and I saw the early stages of all of this, and I thought, well, if this turns out to be big, we're going to be very unprepared even for all of this. And so I took it very seriously early on. My wife and I actually went into sort of voluntary lockdown back in February of last year because we're trying to be cautious about all of this sort of stuff. But I think it's become apparent certainly since the end of last year that this is nowhere near as serious as they've said it was. And I think these are sort of more recent, there's a plane flying over. These more recent variants, I don't think they're anywhere near as serious as they make them out to be. And this is part of what I mean about the way the elites have really shot themselves in the foot, because, I mean, there were different motivations, of course. Some people were just true believers, some people were incompetent, some were corrupt, and then there were those who were nefarious. And those things exist in different levels in different people. But I think the way that the West continues to deal with this 18 months on, or it's more than 18 months now, into this, I think the West is just showing itself up to being a combination of incompetent and there's something nefarious going on there.
This is why I asked how dangerous you think it is and was, because that is obviously going to define whether the elites were incompetent or nefarious. In other words, was this just, we'll overreact, we're useless, let's just panic and get hysterical? Or was it, this could be a useful pretext for implementing
a combination of things. And you had the true believers in there, and you had corruption. And there was a whole lot of things. And as I said, it was to differing levels in different people, obviously. So you'd have the sort of fully kind of Bond villain at one end, and you'd have the sort of true believer or the bumbling idiot at the other. So it's not one thing. These things are usually not one thing. But the response and the continued response to this, which is part of a broader sort of way of doing things, I think this shows that the West has really jumped the shark. Because remember, last year it was all Orange Hitler's fault. And once they got rid of Orange Hitler, everything was going to be fine again. But it actually hasn't turned out that way. I mean, those of us who are sort of looking at this in less hysterical terms knew that that was going to be the case. But yeah, I think this is really dawning on people now that it's not even the current administration in the US or whatever. It's not one particular person or group of people. It's a long-term trend. There's a deep kind of corruption, almost a spiritual corruption, if you like, in the West that I don't think they're going to solve. And people they're stuck in this awkward phase where they recognize this increasingly, but what can they do about it for now? And eventually this will go the way these things always go, because the elite will be too stupid to solve the problem. They'll double down rather than actually address anything significantly. And more people will slowly start to drop out of the system. And then eventually one day the system will break. But I think we're a little bit away from that yet. So everyone's sort of caught in this very awkward gray zone at the moment where, like, I know people who really didn't want to, well, there's a kind of a vaccine mandate here. Maybe I shouldn't have said that word just then, but there was a thing mandate
here. No, it's fine. We're on Odyssey. It's okay.
Okay. All right. So a lot of people that I know, it was sort of very normie kind of people, had normie jobs. They don't follow the news they certainly don't follow anything online. They ended up doing this because they had to for their jobs and all of this sort of thing. They weren't happy about it though, but what could they do? And they said to me, one guy said to me, look, I'm under no illusions that I was forced to do this. I didn't have a choice. I'm very unhappy about it, but I was forced to do it. And so, people are caught in this awkward gray zone where they know that things are not working out as well as they were told. The thing is not what was sold to them. And they're unable to react meaningfully right now, but as these things always go, as the edges fray, to mix my metaphors, people slip through the cracks, that kind of thing.
Okay, several questions. The question of why they're doubling, the elites are doubling down and going on with this, you seem to be attributing that to incompetence.
It could be any number of factors. It will differ between individuals. There will be the sort of Bond villain at one end, and there will be the bumbling idiot at the other. There'll be the true believer in there. There'll be someone who's just opportunistically making some graft, all of that kind of thing.
I'm not berating you for this. I mean, it's fine. I'm just trying to be clear, but I get what you're saying, that it's a whole, you've got the whole range of people involved in this. So then the second question is, you do seem to think that it's not going to work out for them, that it's going to fall apart eventually. There are other people who think that this is that the elites are actually very cunning and clever, and that they are crafting an entirely new way of life for the West, a new economic system to do with UBI, investment rather than profit, control rather than growth. Would you say that that's fanciful?
I think so, because ultimately, I mean, we could really get lost in the weeds on economics here, but ultimately, an economy has to be based upon real things. It can't be based upon made up things. It has to be produced on, you dig stuff up, you grow stuff, you cut stuff down, and then you turn it into other stuff. And we're just not doing that. I mean, certainly in my country, we're not doing that. The manufacturing sector of the economy is single digits. Same with the primary sector, if I remember correctly. Something like 75% of people are in so-called service sector jobs, and then there's a huge percentage of people in construction, which is just basically a housing boom, housing bubble. So ultimately, for anything to work, it has to be built upon real things. And we're just not doing that in the West. And people see that. They know that. So I don't think that that's going to work. And it's also not going to work outside of the really sort of hardcore provinces that are ideologically on board with all of this. Like, we need to look at, the marginal cases and say, well, if the West can't sort of marshal Latin America and Africa and Eastern Europe and Asia into this global ideology, and they won't because these other countries are interested in themselves and they're out for themselves. If they can't do that, then there's going to be an alternative, and increasing numbers of people, increasing numbers of countries are going to break to that alternative or alternatives. So they're not going to get the Chinese elite. They're not going to get the elite in most non-Western countries on board with all of this. Those countries will play ball up until the point when it's no longer convenient for them to do so.
You know, a really sort of simple analogy here seems to be, if you imagined a working class father and a middle class father discussing what they're going to do with their children at leaving school. And the middle class father might say, well, he's going to do a gender studies degree, something really fancy, something theoretical. Hopefully it will lead to a career in something like that. He's going to learn about, you know, fancy ideas. And the working class guy might say, well, my kid's getting an apprenticeship and he's going to go into a trade. And, you know, I think with the West and the rest, you now have the West obsessing over fancy ideas that aren't very practical at all and indeed are often completely insane. Whereas the rest of the world is probably looking at that and thinking that isn't going to lead to anything. That's, you're building disaster for your future generations.
Absolutely. And if you were to go to any Western university, to the let's say the physics department or the engineering department or anything like that, there would be a massive overrepresentation of Asians there. Whereas if you were to go to sociology or anthropology or something like that, there'd be a massive overrepresentation of white people in those fields of study. And ultimately, because this is part of the sort of incoherence of this professional managerial classes worldview, they'll talk about, oh, science, you know, that whole meme of I fucking love science and science is the future and all these buzzwords about innovation and all of this sort of stuff, but they don't listen to what people say. Look at revealed preferences, look at what they actually do. So their kids don't go and study science. They will say, you know, in this household we believe in science. Well, evidently not enough for your kid to go and study it at university. Now scale that up to an entire nation. If they really do believe in this concept of innovation and we believe in science and it's all of this sort of thing, then what will the future of different nations be in this regard?
See, you and I are both mutually acquainted with Anti-Dem, and something, right, that he was saying quite a long time ago, 5 years ago, is that the Western technology is actually stultified. Well, we tend to think of it as constant progress. You know, hard drives are getting just huge compared to the capacities they were handling 20 years ago. CPUs are getting faster, although not much faster, it has to be said. And, you know, smartphones are incredibly sophisticated compared to the mobile phone of 20 years ago. And so it's easy to think that everything is just getting better and better. But Anti-Dem's point was that really it's not. Our technology actually hasn't changed much in the last 50 years. Now, I was amazed by this, and I'm still not sure if it's true. Because, as I say, visibly, things are getting more and more technologically advanced. But it's possible that this is actually quite a parochial view, and in fact things should, if we went by, if the trends of progress of 100 years ago had been maintained, we'd actually be in a radically better situation by now.
Yeah, well, there are a few things to say on that. Firstly, there's the whole sort of Uncle Ted pill. I don't know if you've read that book. I always have it close at hand, Industrial Society and Its Future. No, I do. It's literally within arm's length of me at the moment. So there's that. And famously, Peter Thiel has talked about this with, what's that quote? We wanted flying cars, instead we got 140 characters, something along those lines. Yeah. And he's talked about progress in the realm of bits, but no progress in the realm of atoms. And that, yeah, okay, you can, I don't know, you can engage in or interact with people on social media in a supercomputer that you can hold in your hand, and yet they can't maintain bridges. So this year, again, another thing just sprang to mind. There was a major bridge across the Mississippi River that they had to shut down because it was not safe. It was crumbling. So, yeah, you can get the latest generation Mi phone and all of this sort of thing, but you can't drive across a bridge, which is technology that's thousands of years old. Seemingly, we can't maintain that, but you can, you know, you can, I don't know, go on Grindr or something on a Mi phone, but you can't travel across a bridge. So yeah, there is this sort of degradation, and a lot of the scientific research is actually being done abroad. And I'll give you an example of this. So I think it was last year, my wife's best friend from junior high school is a scientist. She does work in the field of cancer research. And she got me to edit a paper that she was going to publish. And I looked at the references at the end of the paper, and there were a handful of Russian names, but all of the other names were East Asian or South Asian names. There were no Jones or Smiths or Williamsons in there. They were all Chen and Tsai and all of the rest of it. So if that's, you know, okay, it's a sample of one, but if that's in any way indicative of what's happening in various forms of scientific research, now, okay, some of those people would have been at Western universities, at MIT or wherever.
But that just makes it even worse.
Well, that's right. I mean, whether they're at MIT or Caltech or wherever, or they're doing this research in Asia itself, the point is that the West itself is no longer holding itself up. At best, it's relying upon, and there's probably an analogy to the late Roman Empire here, that if the only thing sort of keeping you competitive with the other side of the border is similar guys to the other side of the border being on your side of the border, how long before they say, well, hang on a second, why aren't we in charge? Well, that, or how long until they decamp or whatever. But there does seem to be a big problem there. And I think that's only going to continue. And at some point they're going to say, well, there are enough incentives to do this wherever we're from that we don't need to come over here anymore to Western universities to do these things. We don't need to live in the West. It's no longer as attractive to me as it would have been for previous generations. I think there's a pretty advanced level of decay across multiple facets of society. If it were one thing, you could say, well, maybe they could address that. But to get back to the point about the elite sort of responding to this, everyone always thinks that they're in control. They always think that this time is different until it's not. And I don't think that they are in control. I think they think that they're in control, but there's so much decay now that I don't think they really have control of that. They've unleashed that, whether wittingly or unwittingly, they've unleashed that, and I don't think they're going to get that back under control. It's too advanced at this point. But they will continue to double down on it because that's what, obviously if they didn't have stupid ideas, we wouldn't be here to begin with. So the idea that, well, they would just stop being stupid and therefore solve these problems is kind of, I think it's trying to close the door after the horse has bolted. I keep using all these metaphors, but because it's, we wouldn't be in this position and therefore need correction if they weren't, whether nefarious, corrupt, incompetent, whatever, we wouldn't be in this position to begin with and need fixing if they could fix it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, indeed. Of course, the response to that would be, but they don't want to fix it. That's the whole point. That's why they brought us to this state. And they want to build a sort of neo-feudal.
But how does that work? Yeah, but the feudal system arose for a very particular reason. So it had late antiquity where the Roman Empire just wasn't cutting it anymore. If you're an average guy, say a Roman citizen living in wherever, Gaul or the Italian peninsula or whatever in the 5th century, to say, well, the emperor's over there and this is the glories of Rome and all those things were long past, and the emperor was probably more rapacious than the local barbarian warlord. And so you'd say, well, who's going to give me a better deal? I'm going to go with this guy. And of course that morphed into feudalism, but it didn't just come out of nowhere. It was a response to something. And how did it work out for the Roman elite? They all disappeared eventually. These things never work out well for the declining elites. They're always supplanted by something. And these guys, of course, they always think that they have... I'm sure that the last few Roman emperors, well, they still call themselves emperors, but did anyone believe that other than them and their inner circles?
Yeah. Do you have any idea about what would supplant this elite in this day and age?
Again, I think this will vary by country and by region. I don't think there'll be a blanket response to this. It may be that that a new elite will come from within. And often it requires some sort of defection from existing elites or one faction of existing elites. Other people might rise up from within. And the other case is that sometimes it comes externally. But I think that will vary country to country or even region to region within larger countries. I don't think there'll be one response to this, as there never is. When the Roman Empire broke up or when any empire breaks up, you don't get exactly the same response in each of the smaller pieces that emerge from that. Like, look at the Soviet Union. There were whatever, 15 countries or something that came out of the Soviet Union. They're not all doing exactly the same thing. Estonia is not Kyrgyzstan, right? Because they have different conditions in those places, but also then they go off on their own paths. You could probably say the same about the former Yugoslavia and so on. It will be like that. There'll be different responses in different places.
It's interesting because on the one hand, you're quite pessimistic about the future of the West, at least in the short term, but in the medium and long term, you seem to be quite calm and optimistic.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of characterizing it. I mean, I think, I'm Generation X. I'm right at the end of Generation X, and we're sort of the forgotten generation, but we're going to be a very interesting generation in that we will sort of straddle history, if you like. We will remember the old world, the Cold War, all of that sort of thing. And we will, within our lifetimes, we will see the collapse of both the Soviet Union and the USA, the USSR and the USA. And I think I'm pessimistic in the fact that I'm going to be an old man when this really kicks off, when it really gets ugly. And look, this could be a process that plays out over multiple generations. It probably will. It's not going to be a sort of Hollywood event. I very much believe in the catabolic collapse, which is a sort of a downward slope. It's not a straight line. It's jagged, but it's a downward trend that plays out over a longer period of time. But I will be an old man when this really starts to, when the fun times really arrive. And my children are going to, they're going to live through this. It's not going to be good. But in some ways, the West, or what emerges from the West, and these places will no longer recognizably be one entity that we will call the West, or the people in the future will call the West. These places will then be able to go their own way and do new things. They will be able to create new cultures. There will be a sort of a new series of places that will arise from all of this, in the same way that the collapse of the Roman Empire eventually gave birth to Spain and France and Italy and other places as well, obviously. And those places did their own thing. And eventually we will retain some aspects of what we have now, and we may rediscover others in the future. But it's, whenever you have an end of an epoch, you can look at it as, well, everything's coming to an end, or you can say, well, a new thing is about to begin. And that will be difficult at different times. I mean, history is never smooth sailing, but it will be new opportunities. So long term, I'm optimistic, because things always go on. It's very rare that everything just disappears. I don't believe that we're coming into any sort of apocalypse, and I don't believe all the sort of alarmism around environmental issues and all of this sort of stuff. I mean, I think we do have environmental issues, but not in the way that they talk about them. I think that things will go on and new things will emerge. That's sort of the cycle of life. It's the cycle of civilizations.
Yeah, and as my previous guest was saying, we're going to have to get comfy with elite, with institutions disappearing, with institutions collapsing and being replaced with new ones, and that's going to be difficult for a lot of right wingers.
Difficult for a lot of people. I mean, I'm kind of at that point when it comes to the medical system now. I'm not sure to what extent you or your listeners know about this, but my wife, she has developed pericarditis. She got the first shot. I was different to her, shall we say. I didn't go down the same path as her, but she got that, and it's been interesting to watch her responses to a lot of the sort of dysfunction. So she supposedly, well, she got an exemption. She had to sort of argue with the doctor for an hour to do so. He didn't want to give one to her. Then about a week later, she received a letter from Medicare, which is the sort of overarching medical system here. And they said, actually, that doctor wasn't authorized to give her an exemption. She'd have to see a different kind of doctor. So she's now booked into that. And it's just been this fairly surreal experience for her. And I've been watching her become more and more disillusioned with the system, and some other people I know also who have experienced similar kinds of things. And through all of this, I've been almost, I've had almost a gallows humor about the whole thing, because I don't expect all of this to work. This is all sort of happening exactly as I would have predicted it to happen. So, I mean, of course, there are still things that happen to me, and I feel very frustrated about them. And I'll come home and whinge to my wife or whinge to my friends or whatever. Oh, this thing happened. I can't believe it. But I'm coming to terms with the fact that things just don't work. And this is actually another point about what happens. As things start to decay, people start to make their own arrangements. And those arrangements aren't always satisfactory, but they're the best options that they have. So they quietly opt out of these things, whether we're talking about in response to, well, if you don't have the thing, then you can't work. Well, then they just find another way to make money. Or we've seen a massive increase in alternative forms of education. Everything from one of my subscribers, who's now a close friend of mine, he's a professional tutor. Business is booming for him. Homeschool is booming. Small sort of alternative, local Christian colleges and these sorts of things. All of these are booming, and they're all responses to people saying, well, the system just doesn't work. It worked when I was a kid. What's wrong with the education system? I got an okay education. What's happening with my kids? And people saying, well, it's just not working very well. I'm not an important person. I don't have the political clout to go and change the system, if that's even possible. But they say, look, I'm just an ordinary person. I just need a solution to the problem. I'll find a workaround. And that's a very third world way of doing things as well. We don't think of the West being like that, that, well, you just, like, it's dysfunctional, but whatever, just find a workaround, just hobble something together and we'll go from there. That's not something that's
we haven't been used to thinking. Yeah, we haven't been used to thinking like that for centuries.
That's right. But people are beginning to think like that in small areas, and not in every area of their lives. But more and more, that's starting to happen, and that's what happens in these kinds of situations. The elite still say, "Well, we have this system, and we do this thing, and I'm the emperor." And rah, 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 and people go, yeah, okay, sure, whatever, we'll just do our own thing over here. And there's actually a Chinese saying that I'm fond of repeating on my channel. The two versions of it, one translates as heaven is high and the emperor is far away, and the other one is the mountains are high and the emperor is far away. And it's basically, yeah, all right, whatever, he's over there, he can pretend he's the emperor, we'll just keep doing our own thing over here. And increasingly, people are starting to think like that.
And then another sphere in which I know that we talked a few weeks ago, and another sphere in which he said that people were improvising was medicine, which is quite surprising. Yeah. Do you want to go into that?
Oh, sure. I know several people who have had home births. So they just didn't want to go to a hospital to give birth, because the restrictions were onerous. So they started doing things like that. Now, again, it may be that some of these things will work fine. Some of them won't work that well. And maybe that will lead to, over the longer term, maybe that will lead to high infant mortality. I don't know. Maybe it won't. But the point is, they've made a decision that the system as it stands is not really cutting it for them. So they're going to do this other thing. And there's a big interest in this whole kind of wellness community and all of this sort of stuff, and alternative medicines and herbs and acupuncture, this whole sort of grab bag of different ways of coming at different problems, because the traditional system just isn't cutting it for people anymore. So they're looking around for alternatives and embracing those. And as I said, those won't necessarily solve all of their problems. They'll be inadequate to some extent, but they've just weighed them up and they've said, well, there's this other thing that's really inadequate, and then there's this other thing that's only somewhat inadequate, so I'll take the lesser of two evils in a sense.
Yeah, and again, this is unlike the West. This is not typical Western thing. The typical Western thinking is, what is the best solution that we can come up with? what should be done? What would, in an ideal world, what would be done, and how close can we get to that? That's a Western way of thinking. But that relies on you having faith in your society and the institutions of that society to have integrity and to have that drive, to have that virtue. And I think that's what people are losing faith in now.
Yes, absolutely. I have a friend who's extremely left-wing, and at the beginning of this year, he came over and he wanted to insert every sort of idea that was in the news and the sort of current affairs and buzzwords and all of this into every conversation. But I tried to have a sort of the meta conversation with him, if you like. And I think I really shocked him at one point. I said to him, I used this analogy of Egypt. So I went to Egypt about 20 years ago, and I don't imagine it's any better now. The place is a complete pigsty, and everything's dysfunctional, and the locals are extremely belligerent, and they hate the tourists, and the tourists hate them. But the tourists are there because, well, where else are you going to see the pyramids, right? So everyone sort of, they're engaged in this very strange relationship, and the locals know what the foreigners, what the foreign tourists think of them and all of the rest of it. And they look around and they know that everyone is aware of the fact that the locals didn't build these things. They're just sort of living off the products of of a different civilization. But everyone wants to be there to see these things, but they don't actually want to be there to deal with the local modern things. And it creates this very strange dynamic. Now, the way that they get around that is, well, those guys are just infidels. They don't believe in the one true God, do they? So that's why we're better than them. And I said to him, this is where the West is going. And I've heard people say, oh, well, if you say, well, China's beating Australia on this metric, say in education, for instance, they'll say, oh, well, we teach critical thinking. Well, I'm not sure that's worked out too well over the past 2 years, but we teach critical thinking, we teach creativity, or they just memorize stuff. They don't have diversity. That's a good one as well. Everything's crap here, but we're diverse. And my friend sort of mouthed some of these buzzwords as well. And I just said to him, look, you know, we're just engaging in cope on a civilizational scale. We're just going to be like the next Egypt, in a sense, where there will be people who will come to the West to see whatever Buckingham Palace or the ruins of Buckingham Palace or something. But they'll sort of have to endure the locals. You know, the descendants of the current British in 200 years, they'll have to sort of endure them so that they can go and see the ruins of Big Ben or something like that, or the Louvre or whatever it is. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, those people there in that place. But where else are we going to see these things? If I want to go and see the Mona Lisa in the ruins of the Louvre, well, I have to go there to do it, right? And the locals will engage in this massive level of COPOL, but China doesn't have diversity, right? Like, you know, it's absurd, but that's where we're going. We're just going to double down on all of this nonsense. Because, as I said earlier, if we could solve the problem, we wouldn't be in the problem to begin with. Sort of another analogy I often say is, because obviously when you're in a hole, the solution is a bigger, shinier, newer shovel. You know, whatever you do, don't stop digging, get a bigger shovel.
Yeah.
That's the solution to the problem. And that's where we're going to go with all of this. It's going to be crap. And I saw someone ask in the chat, and I am going to get onto this now. So where do we go from here? Well, where does anyone go in these kinds of situations? Having a good social network is going to be very important. Doing useful things, being a useful person. So the bug man is not going to make it, but probably the guy who can build things or fix things will. And maybe in the short term, that guy is not going to do as well as the bug man, but in the long term, he will do better. So be a useful person and know other useful people. It's actually pretty simple. I mean, it's obviously more complex than that, but it's also very simple.
Yeah. So I guess you would summarize this as the what people should be doing. And I try to give some practical advice to people, because obviously saying how bad everything is or talking even about how good things will be in the future isn't of much use to people here and now. And we all know that things are bad. So I do try to give some practical advice. And I think you're saying that people should try to make themselves as useful to themselves and to other people as they can.
Yeah, and try to preserve what they can. Not everything will survive. And it's a mistake to think that you can predict the future. As Yogi Berra once said, it's difficult to make predictions, especially about the future. So it's the wrong way to go about this is to think, okay, well, there'll be this, or to imagine someone in the 5th century in Italy thinking, well, okay, we're going to have Michelangelo one day. You will, but you couldn't predict the exact way that things will go. I don't think anyone in the 5th century could have predicted the 15th century and given very specific details about it. But the idea is that if you are a useful person, if you find other useful people and you try to preserve what you can now and try to create new things in the future, this something will arise organically, and it's unpredictable, but something will arise one day. In the very long term, you may not see it within your own lifetime, but just put one foot in front of the other, I suppose. Imagine being someone living in Italy in the 5th century, and you have the Visigoths and the Vandals and so on who've come through and sacked the place, and thinking, well, you know, 1,000 years from now, we're going to be okay. We're going to have the Italian Renaissance. You know, we're going to have Michelangelo and so on. It's a long way in the future, right? Or would have been a long way in the future for those guys. And I don't think they would have seen it that way. But as bad as people think things are now, our ancestors have actually survived much worse things. I mean, this whole thing over the, you know, I call it Black Death 2.0. It's worth bearing in mind that in 1349, the peak of the original Black Death, something like a third to a half of Western Europe died at that time. And yet everyone's going to pieces right now because of whatever it is, 0.01% death rate or whatever. You know, it's minuscule compared to the real Black Death. Or the 30 Years' War, what have you. You know, a third of what's modern-day Germany died in the 30 Years' War between 1618 and 1648. And so on and so forth with all of these events. Another one is that Rome, the city of Rome at its height in the Roman Empire, had a population of approximately 1 million people, and its nadir in the Dark Ages, it went down to about 50,000 people. But those 50,000 people survived, and not all, but most of those people living in Rome now are descended from those people. So I think Rome has a population of a few million people now. So most of those people can trace their lineage back to one of those dudes who somehow managed to make it through all of that crazy stuff that happened at the end of the Roman Empire and into the Dark Ages. So if you can make it through, then look at the dinosaurs and the mammals. So who would have looked at these funny little things with weird modified scales and said that one day they would have inherited the earth, when you had these enormous beasts surrounding them, and yet they did. So if you were that our original mammalian ancestor, you know, we're all descended from that guy, that shrew like being. So just be one of the ones to get through it, you know, be functional.
Yeah, I think that is the thing to remember, that we basically have to get through this. I wish that we could design the world, and I wish that we could have influence, but the world today is corrupt and rotten, and it's very good, it's very efficient at remaining corrupt and rotten.
It won't for much longer, because the bug man doesn't reproduce, and they're going to hit their limits in terms of immigration, because at some point these immigrants are going to refuse to play ball anymore, or they're going to demand their own slice of power. And it's not clear that they will necessarily want to do things the same way. So they're going to hit the limit in that regard. They're also going to hit the limit in terms of what they've been able to do for the past few generations, is kind of carve off the children of the right, so children of conservative families, or however you want to describe them. They've been able to convert them, if you like. But I think they're running up against their limits there, because it's almost like they've picked the low-hanging fruit there. And the people on the right who remain are tuned into this now, and they're not going to let their kids go that way. And they're going to have a lot of kids. So in some regards, the worst of this problem is going to be over within a couple of generations. And then we're going to have the sort of long climb out of the abyss. But I think to some extent, this is going to be a self-correcting problem.
Right. Yeah, this is to do with who turns up in the future.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Conservatives have more kids and religious people have more kids.
Yeah, and as I said, they've converted all of those that they will. And they're left with the kind of the really hardcore people now who are not going to be converted. And those people are just going to fill the gap, essentially. Or they're going to expand to fill that space.
Right. Okay, well, we'll get to the questions now. This is from Reaping Justice. This millennial, keep yourself and your family safe from the new Omicron variant. Head over to your favorite drugstore website and enter promo code FREEDOM for 25% off your new Pfizer COVID pill after you get your booster. Make sure to say that the Franklin sent you.
You know what that's a reference to?
No.
Oh, sorry, I interrupted then. A few weeks ago, I went to Melbourne to pick up one of my friends, and then we went on a road trip. And I was listening to sort of normie radio, and it was in that lead up to that whole Black Friday thing. And that's a fairly recent phenomenon in Australia, the Black Friday sales. And that was all just after the sort of big lockdowns finished. And so all of these ads were for Black Friday. And there was one where if you entered promo code FREEDOM, then you got some discount or something. But at the same time, there were people like me. I wouldn't have been able to do that because I was locked out of those sales. I guess I could have done them online, but I was locked out of the in-person sales, if you like. So yeah, promo code FREEDOM. Awesome. Yeah, so I mentioned that in one of my videos, so that's probably where he got that from.
That is just ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's really Orwellian. At this point, I just sort of laugh at this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Okay, the next question, and this comes, JQ gives some ice cream. I don't really know what that, I think it's an emoji of ice cream, and $10. So thank you very much. Okay. Now, Winter Phoenix Forest Kirin says, "Hail!" Who apparently he loves your channel.
Yeah, he's a known troublemaker on my channel. No, he's good. He's good.
Okay.
Hello.
He says, "Hail the Franklin, wanderer of the East, winner of waifu, and real life Harvest Moon protagonist. You've truly lived a wonderful life. And greetings to Waifu Pillow, Aegis, Lady of Shalott, Iron Duke, etc." By the way, my donation, $18.53, is a reference to Japan opening up to the West.
Okay. Admiral Perry and his infamous black ships. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. And then he makes another donation and says, "Franklin, Winter Phoenix Forest Kirin again, do you think that the East will still admire the West in the future? I think we covered this. Do they still admire the West now? What about the Chinese and their diaspora? Do they generally look down on Westerners? What are the attitudes you've encountered?"
Well, it's mixed. They really like classical music. And in some ways, the East is kind of holding up classical music. And so, yeah, there will be things like that, obviously. And they're really into sort of, let's say, pre-20th century European culture, art and architecture and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I mean, they like going to Europe to see all the old stuff, basically. So, yes, they will admire those things. Again, it will be probably along those lines of what I discussed with Egypt, where people go to Egypt to see the glories of the pyramids and the Sphinx and all of this kind of thing. But they have to endure the locals and the modern culture, which is a different thing. It's a, you know, they're physically in Egypt, but they're not the same people as the ancient Egyptians, and they don't have the same culture. It will be like that, I think. And the diaspora, yeah, they will probably keep their mouths shut largely, I imagine, because that would be the most prudent thing to do. I actually know a guy who, it's a very strange situation. He migrated here when he was 5 with his parents, and they're both Han Chinese, but his mother's from Southeast Asia and his father's from Hong Kong. And he married a Chinese woman, a Chinese national. And over the time that he's known her, he's become rabidly pro-China, pro-nationalist. And so I have some interesting conversations with him, shall we say. And it's at times I have to, it's somewhat galling, but I persist. And I said to him, well, look, you know, you're going to have to live amongst this. Probably the best thing you can do is keep your opinions to yourself, because that's not going to work out too well for you otherwise. So I think that's what they'll do within the West. They'll sort of endure it and try to continue as they can. Outside of the West, so much of modern science and so on and so forth has been done by the West already and rests upon what's already been done, so that they will acknowledge that to that extent. But they'll be the inheritors of that in the way that other places were. I don't know. Well, you could say within Europe, the Renaissance began in Italy, but I mean, Italy was still producing stuff, obviously, and it produced, let's say, Verdi and Puccini in the late 19th century. But the focus of, say, Western music had moved away from northern Italy with guys like Vivaldi and so on. It had moved farther north, and painting had moved and so on and so forth. But I guess people still acknowledge those things, even if they weren't the centers of these things from that point on. It'd probably be like that.
All right. And there are just a couple of more questions. Lady of Shalott, is it Shalott or Shalott? It must be Shalott.
I imagine Shalott. I don't know, yeah. But she's she's another known troublemaker at my child. Okay. She's good. She's good.
All right. Just wanted to wish my friend the Franklin a happy, restful Christmas. Does he think the Victorian government here in Australia will come down even harder on those of us opposing their narrative in the big protests, etc.? Many of us are fearful of what 2022 will bring, to be honest. Many thanks.
Thanks for the well wishes. Look, I'm not tapped into that whole kind of thing. I'll tell a quick story. The other day, my friend was over here and we're building fences so that I can get some livestock in these paddocks here and become somewhat more resilient. And my neighbor, he came over, he was on his way to a protest, and he started talking about this protest and so on. And it did strike me that there I was building something and he was going off to, in some way, LARP. I know maybe that's a little bit harsh, but look, I think the government here has to tread a fine line, because there's a federal election in the first half of the year, and there's a state election in the second half of the year. So they won't want to appear too draconian, I suspect, because of those elections coming up. That's what I imagine. But look, who knows? But as I said, I'm not really sort of involved in that kind of thing. I don't know. Look, maybe something will come from those protests, but I'm sort of trying to build stuff here rather than do those. Okay. And I'm probably in enough trouble already for my online activities. I'm probably on multiple lists. I don't need to go on another one.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Okay. Reaping Justice asks, are the Melburnians still enjoying their tapas atop the milk crates while they shiver in the Antarctic breeze as they look forward to their lonely aging in government retirement homes and being cared for by the children of the third world immigrants replacing them? Fucking hell. That might be a reference to some summary that you gave.
It's from a video I made called The Cafe Versus the Castle, or The Castle Versus the Cafe. I think The Cafe Versus the Castle. And it was basically just there was an article. So this triumphant article, whenever this was, I think it was last year. It must have been pre Black Death 2.0. This sort of triumphant article about sort of Melbourne's foodie scene, and I contrasted that with the fact that with a famous Australian film from the late 90s where there was about this very almost parochial, suburban family who did sort of very typical Australian things. They were very uncultured in a sense, but they had a family and they owned a house, as opposed to these sort of Melbourne hipsters. So sort of a reference to that video.
All right. And I think there's one more question. Oh, yes. This is from Gus Fays. For a lot of people in the community, just getting steady work and a steady income would be a step up. Not to insult anybody. We need resources before we can even prepare for the next phase of homesteading, etc. Everyone needs to get some money into their pockets. I think that's definitely true.
Oh, sure. Again, I know people. Well, no, I don't. I would never know anyone who would do these kinds of things. But I have heard that the black market has increased markedly over the past few months. So, look, I think people will find alternatives. That's the thing. If you force them to, they will find alternatives. And this feeds into the whole kind of narrative collapse, in that there will be people for whom these alternatives will not be better, so they'll go back to doing whatever. But other people will try new things that they never would have imagined themselves doing just a couple of years ago, let alone 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And they will find, actually, this thing's pretty good. Works well enough for me. And that's it. They're off the reservation at that point. They're never coming back. So there's a sort of a hardcore group of people. I don't know what percentage it is, but it will grow. Say it's only 10% now. It will grow because people will be forced to do these other things, and they will do them, and they will say, hey, this is better than what I was doing before. And then they're never coming back on the reservation.
So that will be an interesting future. I think that a lot of people have a certain romantic curiosity about what's the black market like? What's bartering like? What is making ends meet like? Because we've all had it so easy and so comfortable in the West, where everything has been streamlined and systematized and taken care of all of our lives. I think that it could be interesting, and I'm not saying that people should break the law, and I certainly don't intend to do that myself, but I can understand why a lot of people would find this a new lease of life, that they'll be able to use their ingenuity, their initiative, in ways that the current system, being so ramified and complex, has forbidden them from doing.
Yeah, and this is not this is not a recent phenomenon. I don't mean to imply that all of these problems have arisen just in the past 2 years. There's that phenomenon of bullshit jobs, where many people have been very unhappy with their living arrangements, their working arrangements, all of this kind of stuff for many years now. And they were sort of soldiering on through these things up until all of this, and their hand has been forced now. So they're discovering, well, actually, now that I'm doing this other thing, I really like it a lot more than whatever paper shuffling thing I was doing before. No longer being a bug man is actually pretty good.
All right. Sorry about that. I was just looking at deleting all the questions that have been answered. Okay, well, there don't seem to be any more. So
just one other thing I'd like to say. People seem to think that I think that China is going to completely dominate. They have their own sets of issues as well. I believe we're going to move to a multipolar world. I don't think we're going to see a replacement of the American hegemon anytime soon. And other places have all sorts of problems and they will experience their problems. My point is simply that the West won't be completely dominant and other places will form alternatives. Flawed alternatives, certainly, but they will form alternatives.
Yeah. And as I said, it will be a new way of living for a lot of people and a lot more interesting because as I was saying before, I didn't actually go into this, but the jobs that are open to a lot of people today are working in a call center or the service sector in general, which is very draining and demoralizing. And I know because I did actually work in a call center, but although only for 1 week back in 2005. And it was hellish. It was a terrible job. And I think that's what a lot of people do, or that's the only stuff that's open to them, or they live on welfare. And I can't blame them for doing that, given the jobs that are frequently available. And I think that a future in which people are improvising and cutting corners and exploring alternatives could be one in which a lot of people find that they are much more useful and much more engaged than in this world.
I think so. Because we have this this phenomenon at the moment, even prior to the events of the past couple of years, where certainly here in Australia, mental health is a real issue. Now, obviously, some of that's overdiagnosed and some of it is that people need to just stop whinging, but a lot of it is the sort of the struggle to find any kind of meaning in the modern world. And that's been a problem for a long time. And we get this narrative of things have never been better, progress, rah, rah, rah. But actually everyone really hates life. And some people are finding that once they get out of that that sort of all of those things that they're told are actually better once they leave those behind and they go and do the things that supposedly are the old ways or that are not progress or what have you. Actually, things are okay and they're going to be okay.
Okay. Well, on that rather optimistic note, let's end this stream. So thank you, Franklin, for appearing again on Millennial. I should say actually that you will be appearing again this year.
Yes.
Tomorrow night at a similar time with Pale Hominid. So yes. That will be an interesting revival of a tradition that the three of us had back in 2016. So, just for a one-off, Pale Hominid is going to make an appearance. So that should be very exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me for this one.
You're welcome. Okay, thank you for appearing. And I'll be back in about 20 minutes with Gregory Hood. In the meantime, Franklin, thank you for appearing on Millennial 2021.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, I'll be back soon. Bye-bye for now.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.